Let her explain, because I see her over there making moves, believing in her dreams, raising her family, buying her home, building her business, and taking time out to take care of herself. She's a mother, a wife, a sister, a friend, a daughter, but most importantly, she's you, a child of God. Now stand still and allow me to adjust your crown, because Queen, you did that. Hey ladies, welcome to another episode of Let Her Explain. It's your girl Latrice. So today, ladies, I have a special guest with me. She's a public... I'm going to start over. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
Uh-huh, yes.
Okay, I'm going to give myself a five second blank, and then I'll start back over.
Okay.
Hey, ladies, welcome to another episode of Let Her Explain. It's your girl, Latrice. So today I have a special, special guest with me today. She's a public health professional, an educator, and a civic leader committed to women and social justice issues. But also add on to the already impressive list, she just published her first book, Pushing Through, Finding the Light in Every Lesson. So please, let's welcome Miss Nicole Vick. Nicole, thank you for being on here.
Hi, Latrice. I'm so excited to be here speaking with you today and just, you know, ready to jump right in.
Yes, let's get this started. So with this, you know, impressive list that you have, tell us about you. I'm sorry.
So I am a mom. I have a 23-year-old. And I am a public health professional. I teach. I've been teaching for about 12 years. And currently I teach at Occidental College. And I don't know if many people know this, but that's the school that Barack Obama went to for like a hot minute. And trust me, everybody, like everywhere you go on that campus, you see Barack Obama's name. And it's really cool, though, to see.
Look, let me tell you, if I was there, I'd be rocking it too. Like, you know, no, Barack Obama went here. Yes, it was only for one semester, but he went here.
Yes. It's so funny. There's a room. I used to have a classroom right next to this one room. And you know how you see, you know, back they would have those cutouts of like actors and they would be like life size.
Yes.
Girl, let me tell you, one time I said, wait a minute, is Barack Obama in the almost had a heart attack. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a piece of cardboard, but girl, I thought he was in the room.
See, let me tell you, I love how Black people support each other. That is a just as walking to a classroom and think Barack Obama is just standing there. Love it.
Girl. Woo.
So you're an educator. So what do you teach there?
I teach an introductory public health course. So I talk to students, and these are undergrad students, mm-hmm. about what public health is. And I think a lot of people don't know what public health is. They think, okay, health, so I got to have something to do with being healthy. But the public part, I think, confuses people. Like, what is this?
I think people, when they think public health, they think the free clinic, they think condoms. Oh, let me go get a bag of free condoms. Or they think... or possibly some birth control, or you know, may have a mishap and you may think you're pregnant. And I hate to say all of these things, but I think it's that misconception of that's what public health is, and that's basically what it comes to most minds when they think of public health.
Right. And the good thing is, actually, that's not actually too far from the truth. So birth control, condoms are sort of public health strategies or tools. Mm-hmm. But the basic premise of public health is about prevention. So that's where the condoms really make sense, right? Because condoms, yes, prevent pregnancy and they prevent sexually transmitted disease. So public health is about prevention of disease and promotion of health. The difference is, we look at communities. So personal health, you know, if you don't feel good, you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you medication. Public health is looking at the community and saying, how can we keep them healthy and keep them from having to go to the doctor? So we tend to save healthcare dollars, because if we can keep you healthy by teaching you how to wash your hands, mm-hmm. teaching
especially
you how to
now.
Exercise, right? Put your mask on.
Yes.
all of that, please, keep us all healthy so that we can save healthcare dollars. Think about it. If we're all sick and we all have to go to the hospital, how expensive that
It's
is
very
and how,
expensive.
overwhelming it can be to the healthcare system. So public health is about saving dollars and keeping diseases away. We don't even want you to get flu or COVID. We want to prevent that in the first place.
That is seem very awesome because right now, especially with people with who are sick and they're experiencing symptoms, but they don't have health insurance and they're scared to even go because they're like, well, they might just turn me away anyway. And like you hear these stories of people who are dying in their homes and who don't have health insurance and things like that. So public health is so important and so vital to our communities, especially our impoverished communities who really do need the health professionals to school them, because you'll be amazed at how many people who just don't even know how to eat healthy. People, think, oh, I ate a vegetable, oh, it was canned. That's string beans out of a can is not the healthiest. It's just not. So it's so important to have these healthcare professionals in our communities to help us to stay strong, to stay healthy mentally and physically. So kudos to you for fighting that fight because we need it in our community. We really do.
Yeah, thank you. And I think one thing that you just touched on that's also very important to public health is, hey, I can tell you how to eat well, but if your community doesn't have those resources, how healthy can you, how can you do what we're asking you to do? So we all know drink water, eat your fruits and veggies, exercise. But if your community, and this is reality, I'm sure you know this, certain neighborhoods don't have a grocery store that people can get to easily. They
They
don't
don't.
have, but they sure do have a whole bunch of fast food.
They have a liquor
And so,
store. They're gonna have the package store, however you want to call it, whatever it is, it's going to sell liquor. So they'll have those on every corner. They'll have that. They'll have the little bodegas or the little corner stores or where you want to call it. But when it comes to a Whole Foods, why is a Whole Foods a specialty store? Why can't every community get a Whole Foods? Why can't every community get at least a Publix or a Rite Aid or a Sprouts or whatever the organic store may be that it could be in every community? Why just it has to be in the good communities,
And those are the questions that we as public health folks are often looking at. Like, wait a minute, it don't come off right to sit in front of a group of people and try to teach them how to eat well, but there's no grocery store nearby. That's not how it works. So we often work higher, I guess what we call systems level work, where we'll work with cities and other government agencies and say, wait a minute, you need to put grocery stores in this neighborhood. You need to put a park in this community so people can exercise.
Exercise,
So we're looking at stuff like that too. So it's not just about health care and condoms, but it's about, wait a minute, it's not enough grocery stores in this neighborhood, or there's too much crime here, and crime is actually a public health issue and violence. And so how do we fix those issues in the community so people feel safe?
It
Because when
all
you feel
ties in.
safe, you're going to exercise, you're going to talk to your neighbors. If you don't feel safe, you're not doing none of that. And
You
I
don't
don't
want,
blame folks.
yeah, you don't want to even come out of your house. Like I was looking at reading an article probably a year or so ago, and they was talking about how they were putting up more Family Dollars and Dollar Generals in these backwood communities. So I live in Atlanta, and if you drive from, out of Georgia to get to Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, you're going to stop through these small towns, and they are very deserted, very isolated. But the one common thing I've noticed driving through these small towns is they always have a Family Dollar. That Family Dollar serves as the grocery store, it serves as the everything store in that one community because that's all they have. So they're so very limited in their resources of food. And you see them when you walk in there, and you see people are really grocery shopping in a Family Dollar store, grocery shopping, because that's all they have. But they're trying to build more of them, but offer better quality of food. So now, if you go ever, if you're ever into in a Family Dollar store, notice that now they're having their own organic foods now because they're trying. Yeah, I've noticed that. I visit some family members and they live in the outskirts of Alabama, so it's a very small community. So of course, like I said, they have the one store that everyone goes to, and it's the Family Dollar. So I was just looking around and I noticed that the Family Dollar had their own line of organic food, crackers and cookies and things like that. So they're coming up, they're getting wiser. Okay, yes, they cannot have a grocery store here, but we can at least up our quality of our own food and provide them with organic food. So I'm seeing the slow changes, but it needs to be a better change because we're in 2020. You know, we should have grocery stores not on every corner, but at least every community should have a grocery store. A grocery store should not be a rarity. A park for the community should not be obsolete. You know, things like that. Because when you're out, like I like to go hiking. I know it's crazy, but I do because it's so freeing. And I never thought I was that type of person, but to just go out there, I really didn't because, you know, you think hiking really, but no, it's such a stimulating thing for your body and your mind to just be out there one with nature. And when you think about what if everyone could experience this, to get that load off, to just free your mind and just to be with one, you wouldn't have let those worries go in your own community. You will just thrive more. People wouldn't be so hostile. They wouldn't be so angry, you know?
Yep. So exactly.
It all does tie in. You know, let's exercise. You know, it's sad that some communities can't go. Some people can't even walk their kids, their dogs outside because of the crime is so high.
Yep. Exactly. And so, you know, that says a lot. That says a lot about if you don't feel safe in your community, you're not going to go exercise. You're not going to reach out to your neighbors. You know, you're not sending your kids outside either. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame people, you know, that make those kinds of choices because it's a matter of life and death for in certain communities. And this is not me just talking abstractly. We all know that there are certain neighborhoods across the United States that have these very real issues and very real concerns, whether it is, you know, community level violence, because, you know, there are issues that folks have in communities, or what we have seen recently, police violence, you know, and those things are very real concerns for Black people. And they are very real public health issues for sure.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, it's the thing that it's an issue that keeps coming every year. Every decade has its own either O.J. Simpson issue, Rodney King issue. We're just experiencing it at a different, the same issue, different time, over and over again. And it's crazy. And it's just like, oh my gosh, why are we still fighting this fight? Why are we still going through this?
Yeah, exactly. I actually had a thought yesterday. I was looking through some of my pictures of my great grandparents, and I said, you know, they would be turning in their grave to know that in 2020, we still fighting for our humanity still. I know they would be so hurt to hear of what's happening. You know, the stuff that they went through in 1930s, 1920s, we still going through it today. And it's crazy. Why do we have to continue to fight for our own humanity? I don't understand it. And I'm like, I feel like this time it does feel a little different. Maybe we gonna get somewhere.
It does. It does.
But it's still like, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You know, it really is. You know, I sit here and think, I'm like, I just don't even understand I don't even understand racism in the sense of like, and this is to be no disrespect to any other race or, you know, but I just don't understand why white people, the Caucasian race, what made them think that they were the chosen race of all races, that everyone else is beneath them and they are just superior to everyone else. Like, I just don't understand it. And it may sound, you know, silly, but that's just the childlike of inside of me. Just like, I just don't even understand it. Why can't we all just be equal? Why can't we all just thrive? Why can't we all just love one another and just live life? Because these are the temporary, you know, 89 years, if you're lucky to even see that, you know, on this earth, it's not even worth the internal, you know, internal life that we have. Like, why waste your years here on earth hating someone for what? Because of the color of their skin. You didn't choose to be white. I didn't choose to be Black. We had no choice in that. So what make you think, you know, you're just, you being white is better than me? You didn't choose that, you know?
Exactly.
I just don't understand it. And the fact that all these years later, hundreds of years later, and we're still fighting this fight now, it's just getting recorded now every other day.
Right. And you know, the funny thing or the interesting thing, I always say funny and I'm like, I don't mean funny. I mean, interesting. The interesting thing.
No, I understand.
The interesting thing is that What many people also don't know is that racism is also a public health issue. So think about it, that, there's all these different types of racism. I think we're used to or understand most often the type of racism with like the Ku Klux Klan and the burning of the cross, and I'm going to, fight you because you look different. But there's other types of racism that actually have a lot more damaging impacts on Black people. So when, and let's, I'll give you one example, education. So education is what I call in my work a social determinant of health. And all that means is we know that the more education a person has, the healthier they are and the longer they live. We've seen this over many years. Yes, many years. It's not just anecdotal, not just me saying it. It's like studies. When you go to school, you are healthier and you live longer, right?
I
But
did not
what
know
does
that.
that, yes,
You
but
are
what
really
does that
schooling me.
mean?
You are really schooling me. So please, I'm
So
sorry to interrupt, but that really just threw me off.
I'll send you some links to some articles. But so here's the thing, though. What does that mean when you live in a country like the United States of America that once legalized separate but equal education and said that Black kids and white kids, it's fine if they go to separate schools as long as they're taught the same and everything is the same. And we all know that's not how it got played out.
And
Black
not at
kids at
all.
that time did not
Not
get
at
the
all.
same resources. So then, if we know that education is a social determinant of health, but you have rigged the system against Black children, and that and we're not even talking about in the past, way back then, it still happens now. Go to a school in the urban neighborhood and then go to a school in the suburbs and look at the difference in resources in those schools, right? What does that mean for the health of an entire population of children that go to an urban school that's underfunded? What are we telling them about their health? How do we value them as people?
That's absolutely correct. Now that you say that, and it's crazy how even just that even affects the real estate of that neighborhood by that school being a F school or a D school, just by that alone. So I now I see what you're where you're going with that. I really do. Just what was that case? Brown versus the school board of education. We really have to sit here, just Black people, we just really have to fight for everything. And I just don't understand why we have to fight for a right that we're just already given. We shouldn't have to fight. We shouldn't have to fight to learn. We shouldn't have to fight to have respect. We shouldn't have to fight for every single thing, but we do. But at the end of the day, I really believe it really does make us so much stronger. That's why, white people believe in, and slave masters believe that, oh, Black slaves could, endure pain. And no matter what you do to them, they can endure it. Like we have some kryptonite in our blood or something like that, that just, makes us stronger to pain. We just show
That
pain
is
different.
right. Because it's not true, because we feel pain. And
Oh, we
see,
do.
and now that you done said that, I got another tidbit for you. I'm like, I'm just over here excited.
I just drop them, drop them gems. Let me hold my hand out and just pour it in my hand.
So here's another one. That whole concept of Black people have tougher skin, they can deal with more pain. That also plays out again in healthcare. So there's this implicit bias. An implicit bias is simply means that there's these ideas about a race of people that is in someone's head. It's subconscious. They don't even realize they have those thoughts, but it plays out in their actions. So if I'm a white doctor, and sometimes even Black doctors, if you feel that way, that Black people can endure more pain, they're tough people. If a patient comes in, a Black patient comes in and says, I don't feel good, I think I'm having a heart attack, or I'm having symptoms, I need help, my implicit bias believing, well, Black folks are tough, I'm
She can
probably
take
going to
it.
give them less medication. And there's studies that validate that when two people, one white, one Black, come in with the same symptoms, white person gets more medication than the Black person. Yeah, that is very important, especially when we talk about things like African American infant and maternal mortality. Our rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality are 2, 3, 4 times higher than white women. And so what happens if you're a black woman and you think something's wrong? You just had a baby, you don't feel well, maybe you're bleeding or something's wrong, and you call your doctor don't believe you and send you back home. And you bleed to death.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. That is absolutely true. And I now that you say that, I did see a case or read a case about a young black woman who was in her 20s who went to the doctor, stating that she was having pains in her chest, and they doctor examined her, then just said, "Oh, it's nothing serious." She went home and died.
Yep.
We like I said, we as black people, black women, we just have to fight for everything. Why must we sit here and convince you that we're not making up this pain,
Right. And it's sad because we often almost have to act a fool
We
sometime.
do.
And you
You
know what I'm talking about.
like
Like, I'm gonna have to cut up in here because you're not listening to me.
look, I'm damn near about to get put escorted out, pain and all, because I'm cussing so hard. So you can understand that I am not making this up, but we do. We get the short end of the stick for some reason, and no matter how, and and I think it's also a fear, the fear of us being smarter than them, more educated. Just even when you meet a black person that speaks well. Oh, you talk white. What is this? What is this talk white? What is this speak white thing? Just because I'm not using Ebonics does not mean there is a white language versus a black language.
And guess what? I can switch back and forth between both of them.
Bay,
Now
no,
what?
no matter where I'm at.
Now what? Like that. And it's
Just like that,
snap of a finger.
But it's crazy, man. I did not, because hearing about these, black women, you see these fathers, who now are widowers, to newborns and things like that because the mother passed away at birth. It's like, what? Why can't they get that extra attention? Why can't they get that extra medicine? Why weren't they deserving of that?
Exactly. And so I know Judge Hatchett's daughter died that way.
Oh,
And
wow.
then also Serena Williams, look,
She
she almost
did
died,
mention that. Yes, she did say that.
She almost died and she got money. So it's like, see how they do her? And she almost died. So if they do her like that and she got money, what about the rest of us? We don't have no money.
Especially when you especially when you're a mother that's on WIC, these public assistance, you definitely get the short end of the stick of it is what it is. Whatever I give you get. Like I was just telling my friend this story the other day. I was reading about this doctor in either India or Pakistan, and he was the doctor of this small impoverished little community there. And I mean like very, very poor. And he was the only doctor that was he would, the cost to see him would be like 15 or 20 cents. To see him, that's how because and when I tell you the parents had to scramble to even get that up, so he being the only doctor, him feeling that he is, that power, I'm the only doctor here, they need me, I can do whatever I want to because they're poor. What can they do? He ended up infecting this whole small community of adults and babies of 900 people with HIV and AIDS because he was reusing needles. And
I think I remember that.
And I was reading, and one of the fathers who had took his daughter to see him, the daughter was gravely ill, and he said that he saw the doctor go into the trash can and take a needle out and use it on his doc on his daughter. But because of that impoverished, part where they live in, and this doctor feeling like he could do whatever he wanted to, so all morals go out of the window, So he used this, he reused this needle, however many times he used it before, on this little child and infected this baby with AIDS.
Terrible.
So you have these doctors who don't care about the poor communities. They feel like they can do whatever they want to,
And it and I think the other thing is also often too, we're taught to respect authority, which is fine. I don't have, that's not a bad thing, but we're not taught to question. So like you said, well, this is what's being offered to me. you know, as far as I know, this is all I'm getting. We are not necessarily taught to ask, like, did you wash your hands, doctor, before you came in here to see me? Can you wash your hands before you know, little things like that. So,
Which makes a big
yeah.
difference. Like, can I get a new needle? That shouldn't even be a question that you would have to ask the
Right.
doctor. But in that situation, can I get a new needle?
Right.
Why are you, what, you know, follow-up questions, things like that, are questions that we are scared to ask because also we've been so silenced for so long. We've been so afraid to even ask these questions that we should have been asking a long time ago, but we're learning these now. We're not afraid to ask these questions now, but it's taking time to do that.
Yes,
You know, it's taking time to
exactly.
be vocal. It's taking time to really use your voice and say what you need to say. Because
Right.
I would rather say what I need to say than have those what if questions. Well, dang, I should have asked and that. No, say it now.
Exactly.
Say it now. So, how long have you been an educator? I would, you make me want to go back to school and learn now. I got enough student loan debt now, and I wouldn't do it, but you really do. I love educators who can not only, teach it, but they you feel like you're one with them. You can really learn and connect with the educators. I love all my professors in college. The ones that really I really connected with and I really got to, like such professor such and such, it was the connection there. So I like
Yes.
that. I like that. So
Yeah.
how long have you been an educator?
So I've been teaching for 12 years. I started in 2008, and it was really out of necessity. I was working at the health department, and I've been at the health department now for 15 years. And my role there primarily is a health educator. So I was teaching about health. But in 2008, it was like, young. I'm a young mom. I had a coworker who I consider now like family, and we shared an office, and she's like, yeah, we need to make some extra money. What can we do? And she was a nurse, and I'm a health educator, and she said, let's see if we can teach online. So we actually started online teaching.
Oh, an adjunct professor.
I was teaching at University of Phoenix for a little while, and then I moved on to Cal State LA, California State University, Los Angeles, and then moved on to Occidental College, where I've been for the last, I would say I've been, I can't even remember. I feel like I've been there forever, maybe 5 years. It's
I
been a
like your
while.
friend. See, I need you need friends. Women, we need
Yes.
friends like that where we can sit here and be like, so no, we need to do such and such. We need some more, encourage me and help me to go to the next level. We ain't gonna sit here and
Yes.
talk about every day how we struggling with this one paycheck when we have the knowledge and the know-how and the guts so to go to let's do something else as well. So I love it.
Yes, and let me tell you, she's one of my, I've known her the longest, but she is actually part of a group of five other women that I consider my close friends. And I write about them in my book. And we call ourselves, we have a name. I think I made it the name because I'm crazy like that. We're called the Fabulous Sister Friends of South LA. It is
Get a
five,
girl.
six of us total. And to your point, we really rely on each other for, everything. Like, oh, I had a breakup. Please don't let me be alone. Somebody come sit with me, or things like
Girl.
that. Or like one time I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my career. I'm not sure. I don't know what to do. Can y'all help me? And they came over to the house with chart paper, markers, food. And we were sitting there. They was like, okay, wait, so what you want to do? And I still have
See,
that
that's
paper.
what I'm talking about. That's the sisterhood that I'm talking about. I tell you, look, I don't know what I'm about to do. You come here with the construction paper, the Sharpie, the glass of wine, and we about to figure out what you about to do with yourself. That's the type of friends
Exactly.
that you need behind you no matter what. I
Period.
absolutely love it. I mean, I love to hear women building each other up. We got enough strife and chaos and calamity amongst each other and in our community that we need not to be fighting each other. We need to be in unity and one with one another. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah,
Absolutely
and
love it.
they're amazing. There's some of us are on the younger side, and young, I mean like 30. And then there's some of us that are
It
pushing
don't
like
matter.
50, and I'm right in the middle. But I think it's good because you have that wide range. Some of us are parents, some of us aren't. Some of them are like my friend that the first friend that taught me, like, let's go get an extra job. She now has a doctorate degree.
Get it,
There's
girl.
another woman has her doctorate. So it's like you can, you know, it's an aspirational thing. You sit there and I'm like, well, now I got to get my doctorate because I can't let them both have one. I ain't got one. You
Yes.
know what I'm saying? So it just makes you want to do more and do better.
Yeah. It's
And, you
not a
know, there's,
jealousy. It's not a
right.
jealousy thing. It's a motivation thing. And I think you something you just said about, you know, the age range of your friends. I think that is a great thing. Like I'm 34, but I have some friends who are in their 50s, who are in their 40s, who are my age, of course. But the knowledge that my friends give me who are in their 50s, they give me a different perspective. They give me a different I get a different perspective from them. I get a friend who, you know, she's always telling me about what I need to do. Because when you get my age, you're not going to be able to bend down to tie your shoes. So you need to take such and such.
That's true.
She's always schooling me on different vitamins and supplements and stuff like that.
She's trying to get you prepared. Like, look.
Look, when I tell you, she's trying to make sure these knees are strong when I get to her age. So she's always telling me about that. But she gives me enlightenment on, you know, dating and things like that. And then, you know, my other friends who are in their 40s and then 30s, late 30s, all different perspective, but it's such a good thing to have that different age range of friends because the knowledge that you gain from all of them is just amazing.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I'm just so grateful. We kind of met through work. We were part of this community initiative to improve South Los Angeles, and we were all representing our own respective organizations. And then we just start hanging out, like, oh, you cool? Let's hang out. And
See?
that's we just been hanging out this whole time. It's probably been maybe a good close to 10 years, I would say. I feel
Oh,
like it's been that
wow.
long. I feel like it has in one configuration or another. I feel, yeah,
See,
they're great.
great to have, great to have. So now tell us about this fabulous book that you just published, Pushing Through. Now tell us about finding your light in every lesson.
Whoo, it's been some lessons. Let me tell you, it's been some
Girl, go
lessons.
ahead, go ahead. I
Some
got my
lessons.
pencil and paper ready. Come on now.
I mean, everything from just trying to get through life. I was a teen mom. I don't know if I said that. I don't know if I've ever told you that. I had my daughter at, I was must have been 18 years old on the, I had just started college at USC. And I'm sitting here like, what am I doing? What am I doing here? I don't know what's going on,
And
but I
look at
know
you
I gotta
now.
finish. Right.
Look at you
But it's like
now.
I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I had to get through this. I had to finish because I knew that it was going to secure my daughter's future. So that's one lesson in life that was like, I'm here at this place. I don't feel like this place is for me. I'm at a predominantly white, you know, school. I didn't go to no HBCU.
I'm
This
sorry for
place
that.
don't, you know, I'm like, this place ain't made for me. And that, you know, that, I think that was my first, I didn't know what public health was back then or social justice, but I'm like, it sure feel bad to be somewhere when you know that is not made for you. That was not built for Nicole, for a black person. And I'm like, I'm just a girl from South Central LA, down the street from the school. I grew up down the street from the school, but I just didn't ever really feel a part of it. And I mean, I made it through, I pushed through, you know, barely.
But you made it. But you made it. Look, you made it
Right.
though. You made it, and look how far you've come to now to say that you've published your first book. And this, and I'm pretty sure, will be the
Absolutely.
first of many because you just are dropping gems left and right. So I know that you got more stored up inside of you. So.
Yes. So those kinds of stories I have in the book, I talk about my journey to body positivity. You know, we struggle with weight,
Yes.
lose weight, gain weight. I mean, my mama gave me Slim Fast in elementary school. I've been through a lot of interesting things in regards to that and in dealing with that.
I've had that same issue growing up as well. I was the overweight kid, and you know, you just like I love to eat, but I want to be, I can't help it. You know, I got to eat what you give me, but for some reason, but it's also the lack of, I went outside, I played, but I wasn't a really active kid. I just stayed home, I stayed inside. So I was just, you know, no real, I wouldn't say nutrition. My grandma, she cooked. We did have frozen vegetables and things like that, but
And that's fine.
we didn't do canned, but we did frozen. The next best thing, we did frozen. But you know, I but we I was a chubby kid, so So it was also, you know, getting told you're so fat, you're fattened. And I remember when I was in elementary school, and I went to a predominantly white elementary school. So I lived in a projects growing up, and they would bus us to little black kids get bused to this nice school, this nice white school out in the suburbs. So we went there. And I remember one time I don't know why they were getting physicals for the kids. And I had to be about maybe in the third or fourth grade. And I remember my weight being like 99 pounds at that time. So I was a fat little kid. And I remember we had to tell our weight. I don't know why we had to say it out loud to the teacher and the whole class. I'm not exactly sure why. And I remember I was like being so hesitant to say it. And when I did, and like all the kids kind of looked at me and were just like, wow, 99, because you hear all these kids and they're like, you know, 60 pounds, and I get to me and I was like 99. They're like, so Latrice, we're gonna have to figure out another way for you to not eat so much. And she
Oh
was,
my
you know,
gosh.
in the, but it was so shameful. I was like, at that time, I just felt so bad, so fat, like,
And it's like, what the
you know,
child.
yeah. So I was that, and then I kind of slimmed up going to middle school, but I was overdeveloped. I had big breasts, and you know, I was the little ninth, the sixth grader with the C cups. So, you know, but so your body's going through those changes. So I, believe me, I know what you're talking about when it goes through being overweight and just those body issues that you come along with that.
Exactly. So that's in the book. I got some relationship stuff in there. You know, I consider myself a type A personality, very ambitious, very driven, you know, smart. And I, for some reason, couldn't figure what, oh, these men. I was picking these men, honey. I don't know. I don't know where they was coming from, but I was just picking them and just moving on along with them, and we was going along. And I'm like, these men don't care about me.
Did you find
They not
yourself
doing. And you know, they just ain't. They ain't looking out for my best interest.
there? I'm pretty sure they weren't. Did you find yourself like I found myself always chasing a type? I had a type of man that I always went after, and I didn't even notice that I was that type of person until one day. I had my two friends at the time. We were just the three chicks. We always went out. If you saw me, you were gonna see the other two, no matter what. So of course, we went out all the time. And so I guess when I would be, we would go out, I gravitated to that one particular guy. I had a look. I had a type. And I didn't even notice that until one of my friends just said it. Like, she was like, "You really have a type. Can you really look somewhere else? Can you look?"
Like, can you let's go over here.
Like, we have all these guys up here, and you go to the same guy over, the same type of guy over and over. And I didn't even notice that until she pointed it out. And she was not. And then when I really like took a step back and looked at it, like, seriously, Nicole, if you would have saw the guys that I dated, they all look like distant cousins. They all looked
That's
alike. They all looked the
crazy.
same. And I was getting, of course, I was getting the same issues with them. I kept going for the same type of guy, getting the same results over and over.
Now, I didn't have a type because they all look different, but I will say they probably had the same personality type, meaning I spent a lot of time wondering why didn't they want me? Why weren't they wanting to commit to me? That was my thing. Well, I'm picking these guys that have commitment issues. They don't want to be tied down. And I would convince myself that that was okay when it went, that ain't okay.
And we
That ain't
go
right. And
through
then
that.
finally, yeah, and you, and then finally I had to change the question. Like, no. Let me stop trying to worry about why these dudes don't want me and why am I wasting my time. So in the book, I talk about a process that I had to go through because there was one. I'm in a great relationship now, but the one
Get it, girl.
before, ooh, I had to do some deep healing because I walked right into that madness. I ain't gonna tell it all because it's in the book, but it was a mess. It was a
Well,
mess.
please tell us a little bit of how you had to get over that, because we really, not reading your book or reading your book, some of us really need to hear how did you get over that.
So I think the first thing that was so important for me is to say, I can be mad at him because what he did was bad. He cheated on me. So I was with him for 3 years. That whole 3 years, he was dating somebody else
What?
and dating me. Okay, so I'll just say that much. I ain't gonna go into too much detail. But what I had to do, the first thing I had to do was, yes, I could be angry at him for what he did, but at the same time, Nicole, you saw the red flags, baby. It was red
Oh.
flags, red fireworks, red paint, red everything. It was all kind of
And that's
red
as a lot
warning
of women,
signs.
as we do, we overlook the signs. We convince ourselves that it's not as bad as it is, or we can live with it, or, he loves me. We justify all of these red signs that, I mean, that are going off in our faces all the time, but we would try to overlook it just to spare it, just to spare the relationship.
And so what I had to do was say, yeah, he's a horrible person. He's an a-hole. Got it. But I had to take responsibility for the part that I played, because if I had just left it at, oh my God, he's such a horrible person. He did this to me. This is bad. That takes away my accountability. Wait a minute, Nicole. There were some things that you knew weren't right. And now you have to be responsible for yourself so that you don't continue the pattern. And so that was the first thing that I had to do. I had to say, oh my gosh, he is horrible. And say that, yes, because he is horrible. But he's gonna be who he's gonna be. He's gonna do what he's gonna do. That's him. But wait a minute, why did I allow that? Why did I decide that's all I deserved? And how do I get out of this? So that's the first step. You can't just keep blaming these dudes. Yes, they're terrible and they do some bad stuff.
Some, yeah, we're not gonna say every, not all guys. We're not
Now,
all guys.
the ones that do us wrong, they're terrible.
Yes, they're terrible. Yes, but I'm glad that you were able to see, take accountability, and also see that your self-worth, like, I'm better than this. What the heck?
I'm like, my mama taught me, she didn't teach me everything, but she taught me
And
that. Like, come on.
that's a big thing. I think, we always want to put blame on everybody, on the guy, and we don't want to reflect on ourselves. Why did we stay so long? Why did you put up with that? What, and stop using that, well, I was loyal to you. That don't mean nothing. So what made you be loyal to to a man that you saw that was cheating on you? You saw the red signs. So what made you stay? Because I think we feel like if we show how loyal we are, you're going to stop it. You're just going to stop and just love me completely. And some men don't care. You could be loyal, as faithful as a dog, and they would not care. They're going to do
Especially
them.
the kind of guy that he was. Like, I feel like he has some deep-seated issues and some things going on with him. And I actually feel sorry for him. It's more so than angry at him. I feel bad because his behavior is very damaging to himself
And
and other
others.
people.
And those be the type of men that love to date. They don't like to be alone. You like, look, take keep your damaged self over there. Fix you.
They can't do
They
that.
love to be. They love to be two. They love to be a couple for some reason. And they always have somebody. That's the crazy thing. That conniving, cunning, personality, because they can't hide themselves for too long. So they're going to play the role of that nice guy. So that's how they lure you in, because I've met a guy like that. They lure you in with everything you want to hear. They're so sweet, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I just found my God. God, did you see him? God said, look,
No, he didn't.
God said, look, I ain't had nothing to do with that.
That is not me.
God said, no. So,
Nobody.
and then their true selves that they've been hiding, been masking for so long, finally comes out, and you're like, whoa, where did this man come from? What the heck? They do, and those are like the narcissistic, almost borderline psychopath, sociopaths, because, I mean, for you to really put on that persona of this genuine, loving person, and then for the real underlying person of you inside of you is the total opposite. That is so crazy to me.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So I had to realize it was, my role, and, deal with that. And then literally, I enrolled in a dating class because I said, obviously, I must need to learn how to do this correctly because I'm not, something ain't right.
You
Let me
and there's
figure this
nothing wrong
out.
with that. I went to a marriage counseling conference 2 days. I'm
See?
safely, but because I said if I want to learn how to be a wife, I want to be a wife one day. I want to be married. I need to learn how to be that. There, of course, you know, I know how to cook and I know how to clean. You know, sex is a part of marriage, but there was so much more in marriage that I did not know. You know, so the when you're serious about something, you want to get knowledge on it. So you went, you said, look, I want to learn how to have a healthy relationship. So let me take a dating class. And I don't blame you.
And it was so helpful. And then at the same time, I paid for a matchmaker, so more of a professional matchmaker as opposed to being on like Match.com. Like literally, they, work with you and listen to what you want and what your issues are and what you know, all that sort of, and then they pair you. And it was more expensive, but I appreciated the practice of meeting someone, going out on a date, so then paying for the date, and I'm like, wow, So I did all of that. And then the other thing that was really important was setting my intention. You got to put stuff out in the universe
Yes, you
that you
do.
want. You
Yes,
got
you
to
do.
say it and you got to mean it.
You got
And
to
so that's what
manifest
I
it.
did.
You manifest it.
Right. And I didn't, run around and, oh my gosh, I'm single. Somebody, find me a man. I didn't do that, but I did tell friends I am openly dating. I am looking, if
And
you know anyone, put it out there.
there's a difference. You didn't say you were desperate. You were
Right.
intentional. There's two different things when, and that's how these men get you. When they see that you're desperate
Yes.
for attention and love, that's how you get those crazies. Because
Girl.
they see that. They sense that, oh, she goes, oh, she just want anybody right now. She just wants somebody to
Right.
love. No, seriously. And you will have you and that old country saying, a piece of man is better than no man. You get that. You when you're
Yep.
desperate, when you put that desperate energy out there, that desperate vibe, just have anybody with you. That's what you get. You get that piece of man, and he gives you a piece of him, and he ends up being a piece of shit. Excuse my language.
You're right, though. You ain't, hey, all facts, all truth.
So you
Exactly.
got to be intentional of how what you want, and that's with anything aside from a man, but your career, you know,
Yes.
anything that you really, really want, your purpose, you have to be intentional about it. And Nicole, I'm not going, I'm trying to wrap this up because I can talk to you all day and night, but because this is so good. I don't want to, but I will ask, leave us with a little good tidbit, on finding our purpose and being a woman and just bettering ourselves, especially right now in these times.
Yeah. I think one thing that I would say is to one thing we talked about already, really surround yourself with people that will lift you up. There's a woman I know. She would always say, she would talk about standing on the shoulders of giants. And so on the one hand, you need to find people that live, that are alive, that are sisters. It could be men, whoever it is. Just get your circle and your tribe together. But I think also one thing for me that has always been important is also to think about my family and the people that have really wished the best for me. And I stand on their shoulders, my great grandparents, my grandparents, my parents. So it's like you kind of want to be in a place where you're right in the middle, right? You're here in the present. You got your family and friends in front of you that are pushing you toward a better future for yourself. But you also remember that you are grounded in a legacy, right? That your
Oh,
family, your
yes.
grandparents, your great grandparents prayed for you and wished well for you and worked hard for you to be here. And so your job is to you gotta push through.
Yes, you have
'Cause
to
they
just
wait. It's
remember.
like we Yeah, it's like we gotta you gotta do this for them and for the folks in front of you for the future.
You really do. You
Yep.
really, really do. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. But before you leave, please let the people know where they can find you, where they can get your book. Let them know.
Awesome. So the book is on Amazon. The title again is Pushing Through, Finding the Light in Every Lesson. It went number one in its in the healthcare delivery segment. So I
Kudos.
was like, woo woo.
Yes. We are.
So that is on Amazon. The Kindle version is available right now,
I'm
and the
about to
paperback
download.
will be September 14th. And but you can pre-order the paperback now
Okay.
on Amazon. And as far as finding me, I'm on Instagram. So if you follow me on Instagram, you're gonna get, social justice, public health talk, and you're gonna get some fashion because I love fashion as well.
Everything I love too. And what's your
so
Instagram name?
my Instagram is Nicole D. Vick. So everything is real simple. First name, middle initial, last name. And LinkedIn is probably the second best place to find me. I'm loving
Okay.
LinkedIn. I was sleeping on LinkedIn this whole
Girl,
time.
girl. LinkedIn is where it's at.
Right. And I will have a website. We're working on it right now because we
Okay.
realize we need to step up the game, but it
Girl,
will
you
be
got books to
also.
sell. Yes, you need a website. We need the slang books left and right, like hot pizzas, girl.
Okay. And so it'll be same thing, www.nicoledvig.com
Okay, so
when it's ready.
don't worry, ladies. I'll put all her information in the description. So please check her out. Please go and if you haven't, if you want to get it on Kindle now, read it on Kindle, download it. Or if you want to wait for the paperback in September, do so, but please order because this is the information that we need as Black people, as Black women, and to support each other, support Black businesses, support Black authors. We need all of that. So please check her out
Yes.
because, as you can hear, she is knowledgeable. She knows what she's talking about. And there's nothing greater than listening to an educated Black woman.
Yes.
So I
I'm
want,
hype. You pumping
yes.
me up, girl. I'm
Because
like, ooh.
that's what you need. You are it. Miss Nicole, you are it. Please. You are it. And I'm gonna tell you that. You did that. You really did
Thank
that. I
you.
mean, it takes a lot of guts though to sit here and say, you know what, I'm gonna write a book. I got
Yes.
a story to tell. I got this in me. Let me put the pen to the paper and let the public know what I have inside of me. So, I'm all for it, and it's a beautiful thing. So, like I said, kudos and congratulations on your book. I'm definitely about to, I was reading a snippet of it, but I'm about to download it on my Kindle and get into
Awesome.
it. And so,
Yay.
thank you so much for being a guest on here. I'm definitely going to call you back. You know this, right?
Awesome. I'm ready. I'm ready. This is great.
So, I'm going to say part one, and then we're going to get a part two later on, ladies. But adieu, adieu, and thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you.
And ladies, thank you for listening on to another episode. Bye.